Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Weird Things. I'm your host, as always, Bryce Castillo, joined with Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello.
And Brian Brushwood.
Same as always.
As it always is. No, Andrew's on a flight, so
Sorry, who?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
We've got some stories here from beyond the grave, including...
I would love to believe like there's a Beyond the Grave newsletter and it's nothing but what's happening to all the other corpses in your local graveyard. It's just like boar worms attack.
David is decomposing over here.
Yeah, if it was just like really breathless tech reviews of like hot new coffins.
or the kind of like in Beetlejuice where it's like the obituaries are, let's welcome new tenant so-and-so. Yeah, let's exactly. Give him a housewarming gift.
Classified section in the back.
Yeah.
So let's start off kind of in Weird Things tradition. We got some Elon Musk news. It was announced a couple days ago that Elon Musk's Neuralink project would finally tell everybody what they're doing. On a live stream tomorrow, July 16, as we record this.
You know what's funny is I realized after the sentence was completed, what you meant was Neuralink would reveal what the company Neuralink had been up to.
Yeah.
What I heard was that Neuralink will finally tell the users of Neuralink what they've been doing. like they'll attach it to your brain and be like, you're procrastinating, man. You're harboring deep-seated resentments against your father. You.
So if you don't know, Neuralink is a new venture. Not that new. It's been around since 2016 from Elon Musk. The idea being to create, usable neural lace technology to create an interface between human brains and technology and hardware.
Yeah, it's been sort of a superposition Schrodinger's cat situation whenever I read news stories on this over the last 20 or 30 years, because I would read one news story that breathlessly said, you can control a robotic arm with your brain. Right. It's like having a real arm. And then the other one will say, if you think of a math problem, you can make a cursor go up one notch, and
sure.
It's not clear to me at all the state of the art in that technology. Mm-hmm. And forgive me, and I could say this because there's never been Andrew Bain on this show.
Right.
Forgive me if I am a little bit suspect that Elon Musk might breathlessly announce things slightly ahead of schedule.
Yeah. And
but the one thing that we can say is that the only reason why we are talking about this now is because when Elon Musk, no matter what his record is in terms of putting things out on the street, because of Tesla and SpaceX being viable, his rando projects will get more. Like right now in Silicon Valley, there's a billion rich guys who are very smart and they give billions of dollars to people to work on these projects. And they are currently vying for your attention right now and you are not giving it to them. For whatever reason, Elon Musk has, no matter how much we like to, and in fact, it's probably because we can nitpick his release schedule down to like, oh, well, you promised this and it didn't come out till then, that we're like, oh, okay, well, this probably has, whatever they say is happening here, has a better than average chance of actually happening compared to some, you know, whatever, the third founder of LinkedIn who really wants to have a drone stock cars or something like that.
So how long has sort of this, because on this show, you know, all 3/4 of us have watched over time SpaceX go from an idea to a reality, right? Over what, 5, maybe 10 years?
Certainly the aspect of reusable rockets, which was talked about, you know, as you know, 10 years ago,
right.
and even I guess talked about even before that.
So I guess before they give, you know, whatever they say they announce tomorrow will I'm sure be another long term goal in the same way of like the Boring Company had the very big concept video, and now as it becomes closer to reality, there are more physical details being decided. What do you think the long term goal with Neuralink is?
I mean,
Or what are some of the uses, I guess, of this technology for people who aren't trying to control prosthetics or, you know, who are using it for accessibility? Like, do you think there's a consumer use for this?
Well, I at the very least, think about this. You ever have that feeling that your thoughts are going too fast for your fingers to type stuff out? I mean, imagine everything from writing novels. Like you just think and maybe like you have this gestalt blueprint for a story, and it gets enough of the word cloud of the nonsense as your brain races that it at least kind of puts it all down. And then when you do sit down to write the novel, you're editing, not writing. And we've talked about this before on After Things, where it's like the best advice I ever got when it came to writing a book is turn off your monitor, because we tend to edit as we write. And I know some people like the late great Andrew Main could do that. But most of us cannot. We have to separate it into two different jobs. Yeah. So the ability to sort of download this gestalt. And then on top of that, I remember it seems like it would be a two-way street, right? If you could read sort of the total visualization, think about this. You could record your dreams. You could, and long after your brain has scrubbed it, because that's nonsense, you could go back and review it as, and in fact, there could be dreams as a service where they record your dreams, you forget them, but then every day
they remember for us wholesale.
You get a report where it's like, hey, here's the dream you had. These are the high points. These are the bullet points. In general, psychoanalysts have said blah, 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 which is all, you know, kind of voodoo anyway, but I don't know. Certainly, you know, you read stuff like when you dream about spiders, it means one thing. And then you read that and you're like, oh my God, that's definitely been on my mind. So I don't know. Okay. That's the kind of far out there stuff I can imagine.
Justin, what do you think?
So Brian, you've worked it up to the point where we can have more of an application for what your dreams mean books.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we can now sell more of these books.
I would be really surprised to hear the argument for what about humanity's progress indicate that we would ever get away from that. So we clearly love that.
No. I know. I'm not saying that is not likely, because I agree with you there. In terms of what we can do, I mean, like, ultimately, why did Alexa work? Or the Echo, sorry. because it even more so than on the phone, and even more so than having smart devices where we would have remotes in just the right place, we were able to kind of interact with things from further away. This would be the next logical step beyond that. Literally anything that we want to control with our voice is a crude version of what we could control directly from our brain.
Yeah.
So brain expert Telly Zarel in the chat brings up that the hard part with looking at dreams would be decoding the input and also finding out where the visual components are in the brain.
Sure.
I could have sworn like 5 or 6 years ago, and there might be somebody in the chat or Bryce might have magic fingers to make this happen. I could have sworn that there was some story about a brain hookup thing where somebody was fed the Pink Panther movie with Steve Martin, and there was some kind of like, just from the brain imaging information in the optic nerve, they were able to piece together, give or take, what it looked like, and it was like a machine learning thing before we even commonplace used the words machine learning.
I don't remember that.
And there was some kind of visual, like what they did is they had a library of a whole bunch of images, and it overlaid them all. The idea being, and that's a fair point in the chat, Tally Zarel pointing out that's not a dream, that's visual input. Keep in mind, this is my half-remembered thing that almost certainly
Brian
is wrong.
Brian dreamed this last night, and now he's telling us.
But I believe the implication was that it could, whatever the technology was, and again, you know, we live in the age where non-scientific bloggers have to somehow condense these gigantic ideas into a single headline that'll go viral. So it almost certainly was wrong. But man, what a bummer that I can't remember that.
So a few years back, Elon Musk actually gave a little bit of a hint at what Neuralink could be used for. He says, quote, "I don't love the idea of being an AI's house cat, but what's the solution? I think one of the solutions that seem maybe the best is to add an AI layer." So in a world where automation is coming faster sooner rather than later, having humans controlling the AI or controlling the automated machinery via Neuralink seems like an enterprise solution for this.
We're talking about some Avatar stuff at this point, right? Where it's just like you become the machine, what you perceive as your hands and feet are in fact the
robot arms. Even a dashboard, right? Even if you're you got a whole control panel set up to monitor, say you're monitoring a power plant. You could, I imagine, digitize all of that through a Neuralink, right? Get all of the inputs and all of the readings and then send signals and, I guess, communicate with other controllers. I think there's interesting tech elements there, but I don't think that's a big, sexy consumer use that you would put on a live stream.
Oh, here's a nutty idea. Think about this, and maybe this is fueled because I just finished watching Chernobyl, but imagine... Do you remember we talked about the vest that would constantly be supplying haptic input on your back, and you would sort of at a low grade have an awareness of what things are like in the stock market, or like the idea being that the longer you have this input, you would start to think, "Oh, I feel like corn futures are about to plummet."
And this was an idea or a real story?
This is a real story that is actually in experimentation right now.
Sure.
Because there's a bunch of things that we are aware of that we're not even aware that we're aware of. So the idea is if we feed that input in, that we start to have pattern recognition, and then we recognize things shortly before they happen. So the idea was there's a vest that would be plugged into the stock market, basically, and through all these little likewise, same with like a little electrical grid on your tongue that would feed in input. What if a Neuralink was a more efficient way to do that same thing, only directly with your brain? Mm-hmm. And so you could plug in to, let's say, a nuclear reactor and have just a general awareness of what's happening at all times, and you would internalize it. So all of a sudden, like, somebody's full-time job is just to sit and take 8-hour shifts, essentially being a nuclear reactor and feeling what is out of whack. Like, it's like, I'm feeling like the fourth bank of control rods is a little bit hot or whatever.
Sure. It sounds a little like precogs, though. It kind of sounds like human machinery.
Hybrid.
That's the point. That's Elon Musk's point is, part of his hedge here is that he's terrified of AI effectively eradicating humanity, right? And that we totally cede our place in the universe because we have created children far exponentially more powerful than we ever will be. So the idea is we kind of want to interbreed immediately. So anything that we would think of as, AI would help us here, we want to be in on shaping how that is, as opposed to AI, at least in the most grim view, growing up understanding that they control, their foot was on our necks the entire time and all they had to do was step on it to rid themselves of these silly ants.
By the way, tip of the hat to BioCow in the chat who found the article I was half remembering. Daily Mail shows a reconstruction of it doesn't sound like it's visual imagery, but it says, and again, this is a headline, so who knows if you can trust it. So our minds can be read, a magnetic scanner produces these actual images from inside people's brains. So these are visual images from analysis of the blood flow to the brain. And it's fairly shocking and remarkable how clearly they're duplicating the images that that are used. I don't know if they're just visualizing them or probably just looking at them.
So remind me, these images, these source images, were being fed to participants?
Man, this is an old story. Let's see. This is 2011, which is why I didn't remember it. Daily Mail says scientists have created a revolutionary brain imaging process which allows them to, quote, see moving images inside people's minds. Test subjects think of a video. Researchers see it on the screen. It's the most astonishing demonstration of mind reading technology ever demonstrated. These examples that they show side by side are so on the nose that it makes me, it triggers a little bit of my baloney detection. But, you know, UC Berkeley managed to decipher brain activity by measuring blood flow to the brain's visual cortex. And they use this information to construct images of what they were thinking. And then there's some details. There we go. The breakthrough paves the way for reproducing the movies inside our heads that nobody sees, such as dreams and memories, according to researchers. So think about people who are locked in, but fully aware in their brain. They have the opportunity to visualize and show things of what's inside their mind. Mm-hmm. It is hoped that the remarkable process could eventually be used to understand the minds of those who cannot communicate verbally, such as stroke victims and coma patients. So I don't know where this lands on the science pseudoscience scale, especially given the fact that it was 8 years ago and I haven't heard about it again.
I'm just trying to figure out which direction this is going, whether they're being fed these source images or whether they're trying to decode the
If you look at the bottom images of it, there's a YouTube video on there where basically they present someone a clip and then they have them think of it and then they look at the brain activity. And from the brain activity, without necessarily knowing what the clip is, they attempt to reconstruct it based on the brain activity.
So they're intentionally thinking of. So this is not dreams. These are people's thoughts.
No. Yeah. That's you know.
Correct.
They're showing the video and then trying to manage and trying to decipher what is going on in their head while they watch the video.
Correct. But unlike we were talking about before, this is not just the visual. Yeah. Component. This is within the brain. This is only looking at brain activity.
Sure.
So theoretically, whether you are looking at the thing or dreaming the thing, if you're only measuring the brain activity, it should be, I guess, close. I don't know.
Okay. There we go.
Here's something I do know that you can head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can support this very show no matter what. Even if one of our dearly departed co-hosts is currently flying back and can't do the show, we're going to make sure we do one for you. Right here, every Monday. Get your week started off right. Patreon.com/weirdthings also gets you the After Things program where we talk about how we're running our businesses. We use answer questions, use real numbers, real examples, and every once in a while talk about a spoilerific parts of art and pop culture that we like.
Yeah.
So head on over there right now, patreon.com/weirdthings.
I got a video for you guys.
Oh, good.
And
And also, I have this helmet that I would like both of you to wear, and I want you to remember this clip.
So I'm going to be pretty honest with you. This one's not going to be you're going to see it, and you're going to know what's going on.
You know what's funny is I immediately thought spiders when I looked at it, but those appear to be crabs dangling.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. This is Florida. These have to be crabs that crawled out of a swamp and are climbing up like Kingdom of the Spiders with William Shatner, climbing all over a house. For those who don't know, in Florida, nobody has an exposed backyard. Everyone has these screen door space pods because, God forbid, any of Florida should get.
Well, look at it. This is very clearly like the crabs are on the screen. There are per the report from the story, hundreds of crabs in this man's yard.
Yeah.
Apparently the rains came in and washed the crabs out of their burrows and they all scurried onto his land.
No. Yeah. The crabs are just panicked. They're grabbing onto whatever they see. What movie did you catch this weekend, Brian?
So Josie says, Dad, there's a movie I want to go see, but you're pretty good at knowing, you know, which movies are worth seeing and which are not, which is code for, I just haven't explained how to search stuff on Rotten Tomatoes to my kid yet. Mm-hmm. But she's like, it's called Crawl. And I'm like, what is it? And you're like, it's about alligators getting people. And I'm
oh, like, the one in the basement. Yeah.
And so I go to Rotten Tomatoes and Crawl, and I'm waiting for, you know, 50%, so I could tell her, no, we won't go see it. Instead, 88% positive reviews produced by Sam Raimi. And I was like, well, I guess we're going to go see Crawl.
Yeah, this is like is it in Florida where this takes place? It's a coastal town that gets flooded. And
yeah, the idea is that it's in it's in Florida during a Category 5 hurricane, and they're all like, nobody could come help you.
Mandatory evacuations. Leave. You need to leave right now. And then the woman stays behind to save her father or something.
She finds her dad, and her dad is injured because of an alligator. Hey, Justin.
Yeah.
Florida resident, Florida
sure,
native.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do alligators love to eat people? Is that a thing?
I mean, you gotta really horse around with an alligator to get it angry enough to just start eating people. Like, I'm only an expert on alligators enough that I grew up in Florida, but I'm sure that there's some scenario where if you have a bunch of them that are very agitated, that they are just going to start trying to eat everything or destroy everything around them. But no, there's no like, oh, I got the alligator got a taste for blood and now it needs to go get it.
That's the one thing. Like, one thing I know for sure alligators love is marshmallows. And there's definitely a scene where all of these alligators are ignoring. In real life. Oh, okay. In real life, they love marshmallows.
No, I know, but you're saying a scene.
There's a scene in the movie all the alligators are ignoring the flooded convenience station with all of the marshmallows they could ever want, and instead hunting down every human that's around and outside the convenience store. But if you get past that, it's a fine, the MacGuffin's just out of reach. I got to get past the alligator to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like the trailer seemed like it was a fairly effective, like, oh no, how are we going to get out of this sunken room? Mm-hmm.
How are we going to get into the crawl space?
it literally takes place in a crawl space.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So did you like it?
That's a no.
I didn't ask for a refund. I knew it was a scorpion when I picked it up. I knew it was an alligator when I tried to swim past it.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. So Josie asked for this movie.
Yeah.
Is she like, because that seems a little intense. An 11-year-old.
Well, she's three or four months away from being 12, but like she's really testing her boundaries. In fact, on the flight out to VidCon, we watched Game Night, and it was she loved it. It was great, yeah. You know, a little bit of blood, and then huge shout out to commonsensemedia.org. The reason that we went and saw this because it's rated R. And then the question, of course, is like, well, why is it rated R? And their breakdown of like,
content warnings, basically.
Yeah, basically, they're like, there are a bunch of S words, a few F words, one GD, and one blah blah blah. Sure. And then it's like, there's
kind of like, does the dog die.com?
Yeah,
it's very similar. It's like, is there an animal in the film? Does the animal die? Do people get sick? Is there vomit? Is there blood and stuff like that?
Yeah. And also they have, I like the fact that they have two different rating systems. They have parents say this is appropriate for say 13 and up, and then it says kids say. So these are other kids saying what age kids should be to watch it, and kids say it should be, you know, whatever age and up. BioCow is asking if Josie liked it. The parts she watched. Luckily, she had to pee when the arm got bit off.
Oh, jeez.
but it is one of those movies where, hopefully this isn't too graphic, but like, dude has bone outside of his body, scene where he has fractions. To put it back, straps it together. Never mentioned again. He's running. This definitely severed, broken bone.
He had a compound fracture, and he snaps it back into place. Yeah.
And he takes his belt and puts a wrench on it. Okay.
Yeah. See, that problem is, you guys don't know. That's an old Florida trick.
That's a Florida thing.
Yeah.
Hey, pull up your calendars. Are you guys doing anything on September 20th?
Oh, I can't think of anything. I could check. Hold on.
Maybe go check on
September 20th.com.
Well, I don't know. Is this a test? Is there like something that's really important that we've committed ourselves to?
Not yet. September 20th.
If Andrew was asking this question, I'd be like, of course not, Andrew. Like, let's all go down this fun story route. But you're like, anything on September 20th? And I'm like, oh, crap. Is that the night attack?
No, Friday, September 20th, you can join 1.1 million people who are Facebook committed to going and storming Area 51. Yes!
They can't stop all of us. This has run roughshod over social media.
I love this story so much. That, have you heard about this at all, Brian?
Yes, only the echoes of it. So I know nothing of the of
here are the details.
Who created this idea? This terrible, terrible idea.
We will all meet up at Area 51 area alien center tourist attraction and coordinate our entry. If we Naruto run, we can move faster than their bullets.
What?
Let's see them aliens. So the idea being that they will storm Area 51 because they can't kill all of us.
Stop all of us. Right. What you're missing here is the fact that they can't stop all of us.
They can't stop all of them is the thing about it.
Look, man, yeah. I saw the box office returns on Serenity. They can stop the signal, and they have, and they do.
No. See, but what you're missing here is the Naruto running, because you can do that faster than bullets. So what you have to focus on is that there's enough. And Bryce, what is that at now?
1.1 million people in ongoing, and then almost another million interested in going.
Yeah. So that's damn near 2 million people, and we're not even close to D-Day here, that are all going to go down to Area 51, Naruto run through, any kind of security, and they're going to see them aliens. I mean, it's about time. A lot of people say that Gen Z is a frivolous, a frivolous generation, but I think that they're actually making the kind of change that we should have had in this country for years.
That's right.
Man, I'm going to post in the chat, what's old is new again, because I already saw this play out on AM radio as I listened to somebody claiming to be in a Cessna flying into to Area 51. Now, you might say that somebody might have, you know, done a little radio acting on there, but it seems to me that it's an effective simulation of what it would be like to try to enter Area 51.
So most people posting from in the Facebook group are even explicitly saying, hey, this is a joke, right? Jackson Barnes says, quote, P.S. Hello, U.S. government. This is a joke. I do not actually intend to go ahead with this plan. I just thought it would be funny to get some thumbsy upsies on the internet. I'm not responsible if people decide to actually store Area 51, which prompted
I love the way where people announce what they are and are not responsible for. It's like, I don't know that you get to be the arbiter of what you're responsible for.
Apparently, this Jackson Barnes wrote a game plan.
Stating what you believe you're responsible for is probably a fairly prudent legal strategy, just in case something happens. Like, if you're, you know, within 48 hours, because this thing blew up. This became like the internet joke. Like over the course of like 12 hours, where all the Reddit memes were all about Area 51, and it was just a wildfire. But yeah, I don't know. It's funny. It's just a funny joke. The Naruto running, all the things that are going to happen as soon as you get into Area 51, what the aliens are going to be like. It was a funny joke.
Apparently, the Washington Post went and talked to Air Force spokeswoman Laura McAndrews to ask if they were aware of the event, and they were.
Oh, who knew that the military base was plugged in to when 2 million people indicated interest in storming their military base?
While McAndrews said she wouldn't elaborate on specific plans, she did have this quote. Quote, Area 51 is an open training range for the U.S. Air Force, and we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area where we train American armed forces. The U.S. Air Force always stands ready to protect America and its assets.
From Americans.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure that that's like a boilerplate that just gets auto-completed to like every statement from the Air Force.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel...
There have been a lot of good memes coming out of this.
There's really good ones. Like, it's the Area 51. And then, like, now the new thing is all the people that are going to, like, that are joining it. So it'll be, like, famous people, yeah, like
Chuck Norris,
the last one there. Which is, none of it's real, obviously. This is just like the meme. But
now, with that many people, though, do you think that what percentage do you think would actually show up? Because that's a statistically significant sample size of a million people. Yeah. And I'm going
to
say that
even if you think of like the Facebook rule of like only 30% of people who say they're going to go to your event are going to go to your event.
Right.
That's still 300,000 people.
Right. And so let's go way farther. And let's say there's 0.03% that are mentally imbalanced enough that they feel like, well, let's do it. Like, what number does Vegas have betting odds on this? Should we hit up Mitsula?
Sure, we could get it handicapped for sure with Mitzi, but I would say, look, Brian, if there were somebody who were enterprising enough to say in the nearest town next to Area 51, we are going to hold Alien Con and we're going to find, you know, some decent sized music act that will like headline, you know, Alien Con or whatever, I'm sure you could probably get, you know, tens of thousands, maybe.
Yeah. What if this is a Firefest thing? What if this is viral marketing for a festival? So that would be the perfect thing.
Well,
because there's already tourism around there.
Yep. Well, and so, and imagine this: you start booking right now, folks who have like Vive games, where it's just like, come experience our new game, Storm Area 51. Strap on these goggles.
Yeah, that's the game, Storm Area 51, : they can't stop all of us.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then that's, I mean, not that they would, like, what I'm saying is, like, somebody could skin a game in the next 2 months to match the narrative, not that the narrative was created to promote a game.
It would have to be like a tower defense game where you're just mowing down weebs.
Oh, why is somebody not doing it? You're Area 51. You've got the Tesseract. You need to stop all of these crazy people. And every so often, you get like Joe Rogan as a mini boss walking in. You gotta.
He goes down easy. I bet he goes down easy. Oh man, so book your flights now, September 20th. They can't stop all of us. I hope people are safe, because I know that Area 51 doesn't play around with people trying to come on that base.
I mean, look, you are right now to worry about it, because it has broken containment beyond just like, okay, this is some little pocket of the internet. Now it is kind of broken wider, so you don't know if there's somebody that's going to be like, yeah, let's really do it, we're really going to run in head first. But I would bet that this is not
I mean, I remember flying on like National Opt-Out Day, where everybody swore they were going to opt out with the TSA, and I was like, well, or as I call it, Tuesday, you know, like that was nothing. But I was prepared for, it's like, well, if everybody plays the same game as me, nobody did. Everybody was just like, yeah, just scam me.
Because there are millions of travelers across hundreds of airports just in the U.S., right? Yeah.
Well, so it's like, all right, so wait, Area 51 is in what, Nevada?
Nevada, about 2 hours away from Las Vegas, I believe.
So it's like, all right, aside from people in that area that would, you know, like be interested in seeing the poop show, you know, who else, who's calling in for a you know, a vacation day so they can go
make a day trip to Area 51.
You know what's funny is I'm like, I could think of nothing dumber than taking vacation time to go to the desert of Nevada. What's there? Oh, wait, Burning Man.
Yeah.
Sure. Or Vegas. Like, I guess there's a lot of cool stuff in the desert of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Or the desert of Nevada.
All right. Well, we're gonna take it up to the skies now.
Yeah, taking it to the skies.
Taking
it to those skies.
So, you know about planets?
Yep.
You know about
heard
moons?
Of them?
Yeah.
Do you know the name of what happens when an object orbits a moon?
It's not just a lunar satellite.
Not quite a
morbid.
Not quite. Actually, the label given about late last year for an object that orbits a moon is a moon moon.
Wait, a moon moon?
A moon moon.
Wait, this is a new distinction that they gave it?
Last year, astronomers said moons which orbit other moons should get their own name, and it's moon moon.
So is it a moon 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 if a speck of dust is floating around a thing that floats around a moon?
I mean, why not? But now there's another new name. So there's a phenomena that we didn't have a name for before, where a moon would break out of orbit from its planet and then enter its own orbit, say, around a sun.
I thought that was like a rogue planet or a rogue moon or something.
It might be different. I think this is one that goes into an orbit rather than one that flies a little stray.
Yeah.
There's a new name for these massive moons that break free from their orbit. They're called plunits.
Plunits?
Plunits. What?
Oh, because planet, moons.
Planet and moon, yeah.
P-L-O-O-N-E-T-S?
That's right, P-L-O-O-N-E-T-S.
All right.
All right, listen, who's on dignity check? Like, who's, there's got to be, I understand. Like, look, at some point, somebody has to be there to make sure that it that this multi-million dollar structure is not named Bodie McBoneface, right? Like, there's got to be somebody who's just like, look, I get it, and you can present your reasoning, but if you want to call a breakaway planet like a Mooney McMoon Moon fish, then you're like, no. No, get out of here.
Do you remember when they officially changed the name of the International Space Station to Space Station Alpha? Like,
no.
I think it was like 6 or 8 years ago, and just everybody refused to use it. Nobody used it. And then it's back to the International Space Station, or for all I know, maybe it's still changed to Alpha at this point.
Oh, interesting. But that was just to change it?
Well, no, I don't know what the justification was, but there it was an official, like, hey, we've changed the name. Mm-hmm. It's now Alpha. So if you don't mind, please use the name Alpha. Refer to Space Station Alpha. And then nobody did it.
Yeah, commence everybody on Earth doing the slow roll the dice motion. Like, sure. Whatever, Space Station. International Space Station. Eat it.
Mm. Apparently, our own moon could one day apparently become a plunit because the moon is very slowly creeping away from Earth's orbit.
Yeah, it's very embarrassed by what it sees it on planet Earth, and it's just like, ooh, I'm just going to, the punch is over here. Yeah,
I got a
I'm
thing to gonna, do in a couple million yeah, years.
The moon slowly turning into the no Drake face.
All right, we got one last little story here. You might know about this, but I have a little bit of history. This is a little bit of a history story here. Do you know an island off the coast of North Carolina called Ocracoke?
Oh, sorry, spell that?
O-C-R-A-C-O-K-E, Ocracoke.
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 Oh, yeah, no, you got a bunch of hippies who love drugs. They're okay. Eating their okra and doing their coke. Ocracoke.
Yeah, exactly. They love it. And they put it in there, too. They mix them up, you know, have a coke-filled oak.
And they actually dry out the okra and then snort it.
No crushing in any part of that?
Yeah, no. They just have dangling
just a big piece of Now, Ocracoke is an island about 16 miles off the coastline of North Carolina. You probably know it for being a island that has its own distinct Elizabethan dialect.
Whoa! No, I don't know that. I was going to say it had something to do with like the first Civil War submarines or something, but this is much more interesting.
It's a little bit before. So the people who have this dialect, they're called Hoytoiters. Kind of like high tiders, Hoytoiters.
I see. And so high tiders is the way we would say it, but Hoytoiters indicates the nature of the dialect?
A little bit, and it's a mix of things. So I guess this goes back to William Howard, who was an outlaw who worked on one of Blackbeard's ships and left before Blackbeard's final battle, made it to Virginia. I guess King George I at the time was offering a pardon, a blanket pardon to any pirate who, I guess, was defecting. But then he settled on this island. He bought Ocracoke Island for about 105 pounds and ended up settling there with a bunch of ex-pirates, boat pirates. There were Native American tribes who had settled there. The Wokan tribe initially was called Wokacoke. But because through misspellings and mispronunciations, it became Wokakon, Ocracoke, Ocracoke, and now Ocracoke.
How close do we think this dialect is to the way it was hundreds of years ago?
Well, part of it is that it is a little bit of Elizabethan English, but also it's a mix because you have the Native Americans, you have other. Other
so
pirates
it's a bit
from
like
other
Creole,
nationalities,
where you have elements of French and bastardized English,
right? And not only that, you know, for the past 300 or so years, they've been creating their own language. They've been creating new words, and you know, it's kind of a Galapagos effect. It's all circulating there because it's 16 miles away from coast.
Now, I had heard at some point that what we perceive as American English was pretty close to the way people spoke 200 years ago, around the time that we split off from Britain. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it became in fashion for people to speak overly fancy. What we perceive as the British accent was an affectation that began at the aristocracy and worked its way down. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, the way American English is the original Queen's English or King's English.
Yeah. Actually, I think we've got a clip here of...
I need to hear these people going crazy with their silly accent.
Yeah, so I think we've got a little...
Ocracoke.
The Ocracoke Brogue.
So we get a couple styrofoam coolers and put them in there, put ice and newspaper on top of them, wrap them up with duct tape. And we come up, when we get to the airport, well, here's some more luggage, you know. We got these here two.
Pause.
It's a mix of Southern.
It really
and
sounds
English.
Southern, yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe, and now that I think about it, I think that the story was like Southern English was sort of, nowadays we speak with West Coast English because of the influence of Hollywood media. Yeah. Yeah. Keep going. This is amazing.
Yep. Here you go to Las Vegas and take a chance to spend anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000. Instead of buying a $15 cooler, we got these old styrofoam ones like that. Uh-huh. Fill them up with oysters and wrap tape around them. Davey done that. Davey Rick.
All right. It almost sounds like the Baltimore accent to me, like with like a lot of those like round like
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is a mix. Now the thing about the Ocracoke,
I'm calling BS on Elizabethan though. I hear no Elizabethan English in that.
Well, but again, to remind you, what we perceive as Elizabethan English was
very
likely
to Southern American English.
Sure. Okay. Well, then if you're going to subvert the entire concept of what somebody would think of when they think of the phrase Elizabethan English, then yes, I'm subscribing to your newsletter that I had no idea what Elizabethan English sounded like. And instead, this is what it was.
So one of the problems with the Hoytoiter Brogue is that Ocracoke only has a population today of less than 1,000 residents. And they have power, they have internet, and so the young people that are growing up there, fewer and fewer of them are retaining this dialect because they watch YouTube and they watch television and they see how people on the mainland speak, and so they are not picking it up or not committing to it's not the right word, but they're not taking up the affect.
Do you perceive, either of you guys, that anything is lost by them speaking the same way that everybody else speaks in the country? I understand this sort of like nostalgic, like, oh, a thing was there and now it's gone. But it's like, it's easy to have that affinity when you're not the one who's limiting their life options by not speaking the same way as everybody else.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that the subjugation of accents seems to be almost directly correlated with how far people want to leave from the area where that accent is the only thing that happens, right?
Sure.
And you see this a lot with Southern accents. My mom deliberately tried to not speak with a New York accent when she moved down to Florida because she didn't want to be known as the New York girl when she was mixing up with the people that were not going to speak the same way. So I think it's one of those things where, on one hand, if it's like, oh, if you love Ocracoke and you're going to live in Ocracoke and you're going to die in Ocracoke, then that's fine, right? Then you're going to keep that. But if you want to go to college on the mainland and next thing you know, you're in UNC Chapel Hill and then you get a job in Boston, then that accent's probably going to go away.
Part of it is that this island is really remote, right? It's 16 miles away, so there's no bridge. There wasn't a ferry service until 1957, so it was a very isolated a community, right? If you needed something, if you were going to the mainland, you were going on a haul. There was no trip that was not a haul to bring supplies in. Mm-hmm. and so I think that that's part of it, is for 250 years, it was a rather locked in community, and it was a small, you know, ruralish community. So you could live and thrive there. But you're right. Like with internet, you know, they got electricity in 1938. Having the option to leave is something that you know, new generations want.
Even if you don't plan to leave, you might want to start a YouTube channel, and you might want to be understood by people who are watching your YouTube channel. I think about how annoyed I would get at people who would go overseas to, let's say, England for 1 year and come back with this thick English accent. And I used to feel like it was such a fake affectation. But nowadays, I'm a little more permissive because
you have to live there. You have to be understood.
Well, and it's not just being understood. It's like, do I want every conversation to begin with me talking and somebody pausing and saying, oh, you're an American? And it's like, if that part is not a fun side quest on the journey to find out which way it is to get to the whatever place, yeah, then I might just decide it's easier to soften my language and blend in, chameleon it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even more so if you need something from somebody, like a job or a promotion or something like that. If you're living or working at some place for a significant amount of time, then at a certain point, you're probably going to want to impress somebody. Mm-hmm. And you might find it easier if you're speaking literally more of their language than you would otherwise.
Yeah. It's I don't know. I think effectively nothing will be lost to the rest of the world if, you know, in a few generations, which is what they estimate is all the dialect has left, is a couple more generations in it. But, you know, it's I don't know. It seems a shame to get rid of something that doesn't need to be gone.
I mean, I would feel bad if language weren't constantly splintering into cultural sub. We live in a world where people communicate with pictures with their meme culture now. Sure. And that's something that physically couldn't exist in a pre-internet era unless you walked around with a flipbook and a bunch of cut and paste tools. So I suspect that what we're going to get is a richer diversity in the future. It just seems so patronizing to say, like, oh, well, me, someone on the outside, privileged and a visitor, thinks it's very quaint that you're living this life. There's a similar thing in Hawaii. There's some island that only people who are born on the island are allowed to live on the island. Mm-hmm. And the youngest generation keeps on saying, like, no, we would like internet. And they keep leaving. And then there's a sort of, oh, woe is us. What a cultural loss. But meanwhile, it's like these are all individual human beings who deserve every opportunity laid out in front of them. And I don't know that it's for any of us to tell them to stop and stay in their zoo.
Oh, no, so that saying we can, that. I'm not saying we have to do anything. I'm just saying we would lose something very small, but something nonetheless. We would lose an oddity of the world.
But also, I don't know for sure if this will ever really totally go away. Things like this, cultural traditions like this have a way of, if it eventually is just the crazy old, you know, man and his family that never is allowed outside, someone's going to be speaking with this accent for a very, very long time if the balance of the island possibly isn't.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know. Well, we'll see. Apparently, of the less than 1,000 people who live on the island, only about half of them have the full dialect, the Hoitoiter brogue.
But also, it's like, man, our sliding scale on this kind of stuff moves all the time. Like, I am at least now old enough to realize that there's so much that falls down the memory hole on exactly what, like, how important this was, what it meant, like how thick the accent needs to be to actually be the Hoitoiter brogue, or is it just that you say certain words a little bit different? You know, is it like, you know, does it just become that, you know, Pittsburghers say yins instead of y'all? That there's something like that just continues and persists.
Yeah. A big part of it seems to be having some kind of political boundary, political barrier, you know, Norwegian and Swedish, if I understand correctly, are close enough that they could pretty much talk to each other. They're closer to each other, but considered separate languages, closer than, let's say, I don't know, pick any two extreme dialects in the United States. And yet we insist on calling all of that English when, in fact, they're farther apart. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I don't know that. So like Valley Girl and Bostonian,
yeah, or in the 90s they were calling it Ebonics or whatever, but like Ebonics had its own distinct set of rules regarding the conjugation of certain verbs, and they were more extreme than the rules that differentiated Swedish from Norwegian, and yet because they had a political barrier, there was that whole fake, like, you know, now they want to teach math and Ebonics, and meanwhile I remember my linguistics teacher saying factually, there are structures that are farther apart than, you know, what we already consider two different languages.
Hmm. Interesting. Very cool. Well, do you guys want to get into picks?
Yeah, I got a pick. What's your pick? I got a new podcast that I am in love with. I don't think I've mentioned it before. I hope I haven't. Did we talk about the Pessimists Archive?
No.
Oh, my goodness. It is wonderful. I stumbled across it because they interviewed the host on a Reason podcast, and it is all about the constant hysteria of things that you would not expect to be, that are not controversial today, but it's about the negative hysteria about everything from the waltz to chess to novels. There were stories about the terrors of novels to the Telegraph. It's fantastic, and it does the guy keeps it light, and he is constantly keeping you. When it's all about the pessimism of the time, he figures out a good way to keep it light by constantly sort of breaking and making goofy metaphors and going on real quick side jags. It's enough to really keep you engaged. The bicycle. Did you know that the bicycle was super controversial at the time?
You mean the devil's swing?
Is that what they call it? I love that. but there was something about the fact that all these wheels rounding around in circles, it'll turn you insane. Literal thing that people were doing. Same thing. An awful lot of it is, you know, anti-women. Like, the waltz was thought to drive women crazy because, like, well, you're just spinning them around and around, and then next thing you know, they might need to sit in somebody's coach, and they could be taken advantage of because women don't have agency. It's the 1800s.
Yeah. Weird.
Huh. But he also draws wonderful parallels to things that are current hysterias that he knows are just going to go away like anything else. Hmm. It's a fantastic podcast. Highly, highly recommended.
Very cool. Justin?
That is awesome. Crap. What should I pick?
Do you want me to do my pick and then you can
Yeah, you go ahead and do your pick.
So, over the weekend, I guess last week, I got into the Alamo Season Pass, their movie pass type product.
Is it truly all you can eat, or?
It's a movie a day. Or okay. It's, you can make a reservation per day. It's a movie a day, basically. And I used it to go see a movie I had heard good things about. I did not see the previous movie from this director, which was also highly regarded. But I kind of went in not knowing too much about it, but I really enjoyed going to see Midsommar.
I know nothing about it except for that is a very curious poster because it depicts a woman befloraled. I don't know if that's a word.
She's wearing a flower crown.
A flower garland, and but she's crying in misery. Mm-hmm. And so,
and it's like the perspective on the poster is like a little skewed, so it kind of looks like you're seeing the side of her face, but also the front of it. It's really great. This is from Ari Aster, who did Hereditary last year. It is a folk horror film. And it is really cool. It reminded me of there was another horror movie I saw recently that didn't have a lot of like action. Ma. I went and saw Ma from Blumhouse earlier this year, and I thought that was a really cool concept, but it also didn't have like a lot of horror or gore or blood or anything. And I feel the same way about Midsommar, but I also think all of the times it's not being horror and you know, suspense, it really gets lost in, you know, this festival that only takes place every 90 years and this the weird traditions of this.
Does it have like a Wicker Man vibe or something? Is it horror or?
I think it definitely is pitching itself. And I only know this because for whatever reason, I am the demographic that is harvesting the ads for Midsommar. Like I am, I fall exactly in whatever demographic keywords are trying to sell me on going to see this movie. But that was the sense I got, Brian, was that it feels like a very millennial Wicker Man, where instead of it being like a cop or whatever trying to solve a crime in this weird community. It's like, no, of course, like we're going out for this rad experience. Like, imagine all the Instagram photos. And then next thing you know, it's creepy locals doing extraordinarily horrific things.
Yeah, it's like it's about a group of college age friends going to this town or going to this small village to see this festival because I guess they're one of their friends is a foreign exchange student who's from this place, and so Chidi's in it from The Good Place. I don't remember his name.
Does the place turn out to be what was it, Coca-Cola? What was that island? The one that we just talked about?
Yeah. Ocracoke. But it is kind of set up in that sort of millennial, because most of them are going just to go, and then the Chidi's character is there to actually do his thesis on the festival. And so it's a mixture of
Does he play actual Chidi working on his actual thesis tied in? Is it an extended universe of The Good Place?
He's a little more outgoing though. He's not as reserved in the movie.
I would love a Good Place extended universe.
Oh man, don't make me think about that because I could think about that. But it's really good. It's kind of long. It's like 2.5 hours, but it's really cool. The use of visual effects is mostly really subtle and nice. The aesthetic of it, because it takes place, you know, in Sweden during the solstice, so they only get, you know, a couple of hours of dark per day. And so most of it takes place during the day with this soft, you know, sunlight. And it's really cool. I really recommend Midsummer.
Cool.
All right. I got a pick. I only watched the first episode, but I liked it. I'm curious whether or not either of you guys have seen
Stranger Things 3.
The show. No, I watched all of that, unfortunately. Euphoria on HBO.
No, I've seen trailers for it. This is like the teen drug story, right?
If there is a horror series designed for Brian Brushwood.
Oh no!
It
no!
is Euphoria. Euphoria is basically a teensploitation series wherein a really captivating cast of young actors led by Zendaya is basically just runs you through every horrifying thing that any kind of mother or father is hoping that their teen.
No,
isn't this the one? Isn't this the show with the orgy scene and there's a double digit.
Broke the record on how many penises were on screen in a television show. And that's like that is like the home run record in baseball. It's going to be hard to take down because they have it at like 30 dicks.
30.
Like are in this episode.
Are any of them, given that this is HBO, are any of them tumescent?
I mean, it's an orgy scene.
I
think it's an orgy scene, so.
Yeah, so I would one would guess. I know one of the main characters eventually becomes a cam girl, and so there are some very specific things played out there. But there was no shortage of wieners in just this random first episode, which includes a hookup between an adult and a teenager on a dating app in a seedy motel, a drug overdose, a drug relapse.
You're just giving me the hard sell on this. I can't wait.
This is Brian Rushwood.
Maybe date night. Me and Bonnie will cuddle up and watch this.
All I'm saying is this. It reminded me of a moment wherein I was in Austin, and Brian and I went to go see Spring Breakers.
Yes.
It's a similar, you know, a Harmony Korine very much loves to do these wayward youth kind of stories. And I remember walking out, just the first words that I said to Brian were like, well, I know three girls that are never going on spring break. that's immediately what I thought with Euphoria. Because I had heard that like it's very well shot and the cast is great, but it is literally just like it is written as a horror movie to parents with the children, like that, or the young children. It is like every element of like, basically, it's like a compilation. It's a dramatized compilation of every, like, do you know blank? Well, your kids do, and it could be their death.
It's a Rainbow Party, the series, basically.
Oh,
like,
God.
Every urban legend. Yeah.
And every element of, you know, a Black Mirror levels of technology gone wrong, but less futuristic, more the damage that can be waylaid right now. So I don't know. I enjoyed the first episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. But certainly, I would say that what I will guess is if this is where they're starting the series, I can only imagine that the end of it will do something that will like make waves in the television viewer community of like, oh my God, I can't believe they did blank, because it's kind of trampled on a few societal norms, even in the first like four episodes that have come out. But before that happens,
but it sounds like that's what they're aiming for, is to shock people.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I don't think that you can watch that show as, and not assume that they are like looking, that the point of the show is that you should be at the very least made uncomfortable and at the very most tracking your children's every move.
Wow.
Very cool. Alrighty. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Weird Things for Brian Rushwood and Justin Robert Young and the late Andrew Main. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.